everybody, and welcome to Good Luck High Five, episode 443.
That's right. You're listening to a podcast that's for you if you play Magic the Gathering. Whether you are hanging out on vacation playing it on your phone like somebody, or you just went to your AFR pre-release, we're here for you.
I'm one of your hosts, Maria.
I'm another one of your hosts, Megan.
And on today's show, speaking of the AFR pre-release, we're going to be talking all things AFR Limited.
That's right.
We've been crushing these drafts. And by crushing, I mean queuing and playing over the past couple of weeks here and been having a blast. And we want to share our knowledge with you, both what to do, what not to do, and kind of like breaking down the various archetypes and stuff, kind of telling you what is possible to be done in this format.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm having a pretty good time with this set.
Yeah, I think it's really, really fun. Core sets, like we've said a number of times on the show, are usually pretty simple and kind of run of the mill because that's the way they're designed to be. But this one I feel is extra fun because it's been kicked up a notch in the flavor department.
Yeah, it's a good time. And do you know what? I also never super mind like returning to a core set kind of feel.
It's a nice, right? Refreshing beverage.
Exactly. It's sort of like, oh, you've been having all of these like complicated, very rich tasting meals. And it's like a cool drink of water.
I was going to say it's a McDonald's ice cream cone after you go to a Michelin star restaurant.
Yep. That also.
That's how I live my life. Megan, tell everybody where you're at right now.
I'm in Colorado.
Nice.
I literally had to plan being somewhere with an internet connection to do this episode today.
What are you doing out there?
You know, hiking up some mountains. I climbed my first 14er, which is any peak over 14,000 feet.
Jeez.
It was literally the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life.
Wow.
It was so hard. The trail up to the peak starts at like 10.5 and ends at the one that we climbed was Mount Huron. And ends at like this one, it's like 14,005.
Oh my God.
Or something like that. And so 3.5 miles and we climbed 3,500 feet.
So was it tough to breathe up there?
Yes. You have to, like, we did it towards the end of our first week because you have to get acclimated to the altitude.
Yeah.
And even then it is like, you can feel your lungs and like your muscles, like I would say like the sensation of when they start to get tired is different. They kind of like burn a little bit more.
Wow. You're like in space.
It was very, very cool. It was like the view from the top is incredible.
I mean, you must have been able to see the entire world from up there.
Yes. It's kind of unbelievable. It was amazing. It was like the most gorgeous thing I've ever seen. The most difficult thing I've ever done. Because like once you get above the tree line, so like usually the way it goes is like you hike through the tree line.
Yeah.
And then the trees eventually peter out.
The trees are like, I'm done with this. But you're like, you know what, trees, I'm going to keep going.
Yes. And then there's like a beautiful mountain valley, which is where it's like grass. It's kind of like hollowed out a little bit. Really nice. And then you start climbing like the scree fields, which are just like rocks and boulders.
Scree fields, please tell me that's a magic card because
it sounds like it should be.
It sounds like a magic card.
It absolutely sounds like
it's a black red land.
Yes. It's just rocks. It's rocks and you're climbing up and over rocks and it's basically like climbing a flight of stairs from a mile and a half.
Oh my God.
So
wow, that's impressive.
7 hours to hike 7 miles.
And then on the way down, did you just roll the whole way?
I wish that I could have. I honestly very much wish that I could have.
Okay, well, because, like, next time.
Hiking down is what makes your legs more sore because you don't use those muscles. It's like some really weird muscles. Anyways, so to give you an idea, a usual hike, we make a pace of probably like 2.5 miles an hour. This was literally about a mile an hour.
Wow.
But amazing. Absolutely worth it. But would only do it once a year.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, speaking of the most glorious view you've ever seen, what did you say? The most, when you were at the top?
Like the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen.
Okay. Speaking of the most unbelievable thing you've ever seen, Patreon, all of our beautiful patrons.
Really nice, very subtle
thank you.
Transition there.
Thank you.
Really well done.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you so much to everyone who is a patron of the show over on patreon.com/glhfmagic. You make the show happen. You are literally the most unbelievable thing we have ever seen.
It's so true. Like, we're not kidding you. You make the show happen every single week. It's free for everybody who can't afford it. But if you can and you like what we do every week, you come here and you're like, oh, yay, my, you know, magic family's here living in my ears for an hour every single week. If you feel like that, please consider becoming a patron. We would love to have you get cool benefits, including access to our sweet Discord server, a tournament next month for patrons only, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And we are the only family that can live comfortably in your ears.
That is true. Most families are very uncomfortable in your ears.
Very uncomfortable.
But we feel like a nice, I was going to say cotton ball, but honestly, nothing feels nice inside your ears. That's a physical medium. So
yeah, maybe like we're like, you know, I don't want to call us the AirPods of things you can put in your ears, because that really seems like a... That's a brag. That's a big brag. But.
Yeah, I mean, it is. But, you know, maybe we're worth it. Maybe we're worth it.
Yeah. Thank you especially to Ashley, Ways of Sorting, Scott, and Oren for becoming new patrons in the past week, and to Martin for increasing their donation in the past week.
Thank you so much, new patrons and increasing patrons. Welcome, or... a continuing welcome to our family.
Continuing welcome.
Now I'm going to put out a challenge for everybody named Scott. All Scots next week. I want to become new patrons, okay?
You mean you don't want to pick Oren? You don't think that we have a lot of like Oren listeners?
I'm going to say this. If there is another Oren listener, you have to join the Scots. Like, you just have to, because
that's very true.
Your name is unusual, and I would like to know if there's more than one of you. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're an Oren, please join. But this is a call to Scots specifically.
Absolutely.
Yes, Scots, get over here.
Big thank you as well to Card Kingdom. You can check out their website, cardkingdom.com/GLHF. Say good luck, high five. They'll give you a free sticker or a token with your order. They're the best place to get anything for your magical life. Do you want Forgotten Realms boxes? Do you want to get some of those new sweet commander decks? Do you want singles? Do you want gear? Do you want to read articles? Card Kingdom's website has got it all for you, and we couldn't be happier to have them as a sponsor.
Yeah, they're wonderful. They're great. They're the best sponsors that we could ask for.
Yeah, and they did some really cute one-shot adventures for the new set that you can go and check out on their website too, with some of your favorite content creators. So check them out, cardkingdom.com/GLHF. All right, let's get into Adventures in the Forgotten Realms, Megan.
Yeah, Maria, I started playing it on Friday so that I would be prepared for this episode.
You know what, listeners? This is the kind of dedication you can expect from Good Luck High Five. Well, I've been playing it for 2 weeks, so.
Yes, Friday was the first time that I've had a regular internet connection since the set came out. So.
Yeah, that's fair. It's been a wild ride so far, because normally this set would not have been out for so long already. And last week we had our Judge Rob episode. So if you missed that, you can check that. He gives an update on all of the new rules, mechanics, and tricky cards. I learned something in that episode, which I normally do. But just in case you're like, oh, I don't need to listen to that, I've been playing for a while, you probably still should, because there's some weird stuff that can happen in this set.
Something you don't know about.
Yes, exactly. Something you don't know about. But I've been having a blast playing this set so far. Megan, you've done a couple of drafts. How have you liked it?
I've been having a great time. It's been super fun. I texted you about the very first deck that I drafted that I was like, this deck is busted and it's perfect and it was so much fun to play. Like, I should just tap out now.
What was the deck?
Just be like, it was blue-red dice.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And it was perfection.
Dude, that's the number one deck I want to draft, but I haven't been able to get it.
You know, it was like, I knew almost nothing going into the draft. I hadn't been following anybody's talk about like what's really good or what people are drafting a bunch of. I barely knew the full set.
Yeah.
And it just kind of like, I picked up, I forget what I've, like,
you had like you had Fairy Tricksters, didn't you?
Yes, and Faraday
Wheel. Faraday's Fireball?
No, Faraday, the actual person.
Oh, wow, sick.
it wheeled. And so I had two of them. And I was just like, I guess this deck is open. Yeah. And then like the one that makes the little one ones.
Oh, great.
When you roll dice, the dwarf that pings people when you roll dice. I had like the pixies that let you roll two dice instead.
Yes, absolutely.
It was, yeah. It just like, I'll be honest, it kind of fell into my lap. Once I picked up a couple of dice things, I was like, I guess maybe I should start really looking at cards that either roll dice or like give me a benefit for rolling dice. And it came together and I had such a good time.
Oh man, that deck seems like such a blast. By the way, we're going to go through all of the archetypes in a minute here after we get done with some of our general thoughts. So we'll tell you how to build them just in case you're wondering like what are some of the good cards. But yeah, this deck is like so high on my list. And every time I sit down for the draft, I'm like, okay, this time we're doing it. And this time never happens, Megan.
I know. I do think red seems very highly drafted right now.
Oh, yes. It absolutely is. That is a headline we could say for what's going on in draft on Arena and on Magic Online right now is everybody is drafting red.
Yeah.
Why?
Very popular.
Because it is a common consensus that red is the best color. These red aggressive decks are just really, 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 really drafted highly at this point. Maybe overdrafted. Maybe we'll see the rise of other decks being able to combat them, being ready at least for people to try and just aggro you into oblivion.
Yeah. So like stepping back, looking big picture.
Yeah.
Does this feel like a core set to you in terms of complexity, in terms of just like gameplay? What's going on?
So, yes, I think it does. And when I sat down to play it, you know, I was super excited. All the flavor I've talked about a million times is so, so good. And I think that kind of clouded my vision. In fact, when I was sitting down to play it, I'm like, oh, this flavor is so great. Because honestly, the flavor feels like a special set. feels like a normal set, right? Because they've gone so deep on it. And core sets normally don't have flavor, like period, except for like maybe a little sprinkling on top. So I think it kind of tricked me. And then I sat down to play it. I'm like, oh, this is a core set.
Yeah. I will say that it does play like flyers are good.
Yep, exactly.
Which I think for me, I would call the defining quality of a core set, right?
Our flyer's good. It's like, a core set. So everything we say, keep in mind that this is coming from a standpoint of this is a core set and what is good in core set draft is the basics of Magic. Making sure you have an effect on the board, making sure your creatures have good stats, making sure you have removal and like doing things on your turn instead of like setting up little tricksy things that'll pay off three or four turns down the road like we have been doing in recent sets with a high complexity level and like lots of really weird stuff we could do, particularly in terms of mana being really flexible. Here we have treasures, but like on the whole, this is simpler. We're boiling it down. Good core drafting philosophy is what we are calling for.
Yeah. I would say it's like, are you doing something on nearly every turn?
Yes. Are you spending all of your mana?
If you're the person who's going 2 mana spell on turn 2, 3 mana spell on turn 3, 4 mana spell on turn 4, 5 mana spell on turn 5, you're going to be in a really good situation.
Absolutely.
That's what the set wants you to do.
Yes. Let's be efficient. Let's play things that have an impact. And let's just maintain, like we said, those good drafting strategies that we have baked into our bones from our baby times starting out as drafters. I just use a sentence baked into our bones. I really can't apologize enough for saying those words.
Yeah, that's terrifying and kind of disgusting.
I just creeped myself.
Oh my god. No. I will say that like past core sets, there are a few cool things that you can do, right?
For sure.
It's not only basics. It's not just 2/2 for 2, 3/3 for 3. 3/2 for 3 really is more of the core set, like
yes.
size of a creature. But there is like, right, I talked about the dice rolling deck and we'll talk about it more later. Like you can do that. You can go hard on Venture.
Yes.
So I feel like that has been a thing in the past. Like they've done that a little bit more with core sets where there is like, there'll be like an enchantments deck or something like that, or like an auras deck or something. And so it's not boring.
No, it's not boring for sure.
There is cool stuff that you can do. And especially if you like really throw yourself like full force into the, like what you're trying to do with your archetype, you can end up doing some cool stuff.
Yeah. And there's archetypes specifically designed to do things that are pretty cool. And if you can make your deck come together, you can do something really cool while still maintaining those good core draft philosophies. And we'll talk about what those cool things are coming up in a bit, because yeah, I do like some of the stuff that they've done with this. Overall, yeah. One of the questions we ask ourselves at the beginning of a new set is how fast is it? And at this point, at least in Adventures in the Forgotten Realms, the answer is quite fast.
Yeah, it is definitely, especially compared to recent sets.
Yes.
Quite speedy.
Yeah. It's a speedy speed train. Yeah. We mentioned red being the consensus best color, paired with black and paired with white, especially. Those decks can really smash your face in no time flat, especially in best of one. And if you're not drafting it, you have to be prepared for it and you have to know what you're going to do to beat those people. So
that being said, they're not overwhelmingly like, they're not unbeatable, right?
No, they're not.
If you have a plan, as long as you are prepared for the fact that people are going to be trying to aggro you, you can beat them.
Right.
Yeah. But you do, it's not a set where you can like just dirtle and do nothing until turn three. Yeah. You're going to be in trouble if the first spell that you play is on turn three most of the time here.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, we're not casting opportunity here, sadly, Megan, but...
Maria, don't even.
That's the course that we always bring up when we're like, how fast is it? Oh, do you remember casting opportunity being the best card in your deck?
I do.
Six mana, draw three? Was that what it was?
Draw four, Maria.
Oh, okay.
Instant speed, draw four cards.
Oh, opportunity.
Oh, opportunity.
Those what were a beautiful the days. Card. Those were the days. And then the other thing that kind of sets this as a core set is, of course, we're playing with primarily two color decks. Yeah. However, there is something neat in this set, which is that there is treasure everywhere.
That's very true.
Which is it's great.
Tons of treasure.
So if you have a super sweet rare that you open pack three, you might be able to splash it depending on what you've already drafted.
Like, I don't think we're at a place, right? We're not at three color deck place.
I never have been.
Absolutely not. And I think if you're splashing, it's one card, maybe two.
Yeah, it's got to be worth it, right? You're not going to splash.
And it better be real good.
You're not going to splash for something that's not Xanathar or whatever, because it's just not worth it. Because, like Megan said, because you're just for all the reasons we said, core set, like it's got to make the impact. And if you're sitting there with a dead in your hand or you don't have the mana, it's just not going to be making the impact that you put it in your deck to do. So it's just dead. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's got to be worth. Hashtag
it better be real good.
So how do you feel about the main headlining mechanic from this set, Dungeons, a.k.a. Venture?
I'm pro. I really, I'm pro dungeon.
Megan's pro dungeon. You heard it here first.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I also love it. I absolutely adore it. Rob made a good point on our episode. He was like, I think it's super cool, but what are they going to do in the future? Like, I love it so much that I want to see it again. And I don't know if we'll be able to see it outside of a D&D set, but he's like, what are we going to do? Is it going to be three new dungeons that you'll only have access to? Because then we're getting some weird rules situation problems because of the other dungeons. But anyway, that's how much we love it. I'm like, let's put it in again.
It's really cool. I like that it kind of feels like, right, if a person has like one venture thing, right, like an ETB venture, you're like, it's okay.
Yeah.
We're fine.
Yeah.
You get a bonus, but I'm okay with it. But as soon as they start having like a repeatable effect, or you're like, you can feel it starting to snowball, and you're like, oh no.
Then it gets really scary really fast.
Exactly. I had someone against me in Sealed the other day, complete Dungeon of the Mad Mage.
I love it. I love it. You're doing it.
It was great. They were doing it. Their deck was busted. It was very good. It was awesome to see work. They had like the 2/1, the Yuan Ti 2/1. That's a rare.
Oh yeah.
In blue. That if it's the only thing attacking, it's unblockable.
Nice.
And when it deals combat damage to an opponent, you venture. They had that, and then Varus. And like they played that on 2 and Varus on 3, and I was like, or like maybe that thing's 3 and Varus, then they played Varus on 4. But point is, they did those two things back to back, and I was like, yeah.
And we talked about it when we first saw Venture. We're like, oh, this is a free, quote unquote, this is a free, saga, essentially.
Yeah.
If you have a repeatable dungeon situation, that is what you want out of your venture stuff. Incidental venture is like, okay, maybe it'll help fix your next draw with your scry. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll gain a life, make a goblin token, and then that'll be it for you. But
yeah,
which is like, that's okay. But what you really want to be doing is going hard on venture if that's your point and you're in the colors for it.
Yeah, which we'll talk about more when we get into the archetypes.
Yeah.
I like it because I think that it works well, right? I think that they did a really nice job making it work as both. It's nice if it's just incidental.
Yeah.
On a card, you're just like, oh, yep, cool. This says venture on the 2/2 for 2 and a blue that has flying.
Oh,
and
yeah.
When it ETBs, you venture.
Right.
And it's like, great. Like, I would play that card anyways. Exactly. In a core set, it's a flyer. Like, it's gonna do work. And then it incidentally will like get me a scry or make me a goblin token.
Yes.
And then it also works as a mechanic that you can go all in on.
Yeah.
And I think that that's like a really nice sweet spot that they landed in.
Yeah, I think they nailed it. I really, really like it. The question I've been seeing people ask a lot at the start of this format is, well, which dungeon should I choose? Right?
Yeah.
Because we've got the three options. They're all pretty different.
Very.
And I think as a general rule here, that the Lost Mine of Phandelver is generally the dungeon you want to go into.
I was going to say, as far as I could tell, everyone in the world has come to the consensus that Lost Mine of Phandelver is the dungeon that we're picking.
Yeah. Which is correct, because yes, you're going to be able to go through it the fastest and get to the reward draw card the soonest.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, you can go into the Mad Mage dungeon if you are all in on venture.
Yes, exactly. And I think that that's kind of where, that seems like to be where people have landed. If it's incidental or like only a little bit in your deck, you're going to do Lost Mine.
Yep.
Because then you're probably going to get to the end of it. You'll draw a card.
Great.
All of the benefits on it are nice. They're sick.
Yeah.
But if you're all in, then like Dungeon of the Mad Mage.
Like, let's do it. I mean, when I've gotten to the last chapter of the chapter, see, I'm talking about like a saga. When I've gotten to the last room of it, I've been like, all right, you know, you get to cast these cards for free, which is pretty sweet.
It's sick.
I've also played against somebody who went into the Tomb of Annihilation, Megan.
Ooh, were they super aggro?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's nice. What you got to do. If you're very, very like aggressive, you can go into the Tomb of Annihilation. But you guess what? You better be the beatdown, because if you're not, you just lose.
Yep. That's the same as like Faraday's Fireball, right?
Yes.
You're like, do you know what? You need to be okay losing that die roll.
Yeah.
Not like quote unquote losing that die roll.
Yeah.
Rolling a 1-9.
Exactly.
Like, You better be all right with it.
Yeah, my opponent has killed themselves casting a Faraday's Fireball against me, and I was like, oh, yes, it's beautiful.
It's great. I equally satisfying. I like it was the only thing I could do, and I was at one, and I was just like, well, either we die because we don't cast it, or we cast it and we see what happens.
Yep, absolutely.
And do you know what? I did not die.
Nice.
And it was like, all right, that was... That was sick.
You know, it's let's talk about dice. How we feel? We talk about dungeons. We love them. How are we feeling about dice rolling?
Yes, because this was very controversial, I think, especially amongst more established competitive players.
Yes, 100%.
Right? Of like, why are you putting more variance in our game?
Yep.
But I will say that in my opinion, it's fine.
I agree.
Like most cards that have die rolling on them, it's not a huge difference. No matter what you roll.
Yep.
I'm thinking of like Jeannie Windseer.
Right.
Or Jin Windseer is like, right? It doesn't, you're rolling a die, but it's scry 1, 2, or 3.
Exactly.
It does not matter.
You're never going to get horribly punished for rolling die, with the exception of Faraday's Fireball if you're at 2.
Yes.
Or treasure chest.
And you know what? I had treasure chest in my die rolling.
Okay. Deck. What happened?
I never rolled anything less than a 10.
Nice.
So I always drew 3 cards and gained 3 life, and it was sick. Because I want to say, right, there is the blue-red deck, which is more mechanically the die-rolling deck.
Yeah.
And in that deck, you have Barbarian Class, and you have Pixie Trickster.
Yep.
Which both allow you to roll 2 die instead of 1.
Great.
So, right, there's also, like, they mitigated. They're like, hey, there is a deck that might end up with a little bit more variance because it's a little bit more reliant on die rolling. But if you're really into that deck, then you're going to, right? I had two Pixie Tricksters. I think I maybe only rolled one die like twice across 8 matches.
Oh, wait, you combined the two cards, Pixie Guide and Feywild Trickster.
Whoops. Yes. Sorry.
Pixie Guide.
Yep. Pixie Guide is the one that allows you to roll two.
Yeah.
Right. And like, because I had two of those, most of the time I was rolling two die dice. And so it was just like, okay. Great.
So good. And that's a great point. Like, they were like worried about people being like, okay, this deck might suffer a little bit from too much variance. And so they put in a fix in exactly. two different cards.
And so it makes it way, it smooths it out so much.
This is my one critique of die rolling, which is that my die rolls are hidden by my card on mobile and on tablet.
I have not had that problem.
Really?
Really?
So, like, when you roll the die on your phone, you can see the result. It's not hidden behind the card?
Yeah.
Do you have a different phone than me? I thought we had, like, had the same phone.
I have an iPhone 10.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe yours is a little bigger.
The small one?
No, we're the same size.
Yeah.
What on earth? Yeah, I have to, like, press the little arrow to hide the card, you know, so I can see the die under it.
Huh.
Yeah, because I would have like the Pixie guide in my deck and I would roll two die and I could see neither of them. You can always see the result on the card or whatever. But I was like, I want to see my dice rolls because it's so fun. And they're also hidden on my tablet. And I was just like, what? What is this design? But that's weird if it's only me.
Yeah, I have not had that issue.
What the heck? Okay, you have to send me a screenshot or something when it happens, because now I'm like,
I'll try.
Now I'm like, am I in a weird like Twilight Zone where my phone can't show the die rolls, but everyone else's phone can? It's the worst episode.
Everyone watching is like, but there's no stakes to this.
But she could just play on the computer, like
It doesn't. She can still find out what the die said.
Is she secretly dead? but that would help, probably. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man. No. Okay. Well, okay. If you've had this issue, tweet at GLSGFMagic. So I don't feel like I've completely lost my mind, but perhaps I have. Who knows?
Right. So there's times when it's like, right, like Spiked Pit Trap. It's like, okay, it deals 5 damage either way.
Yeah.
And maybe you make a treasure. And I've even ended up like in my sealed deck, I have 2 of them. Because it's a core set, play all the removal.
Play your removal. Yep.
Play all of it. Just play all of it. And there have been times when I've been stuck on 5 mana for forever and I activate the Spiked Pit Trap and I don't get a treasure and I have like my white dragon in my hand and I'm like, come on.
I think it's actually, maybe it adds, you know, maybe it increases variance slightly, but it also adds an interesting computation that you've got to do every time. Mm-hmm. Like what, you know, for instance, Faraday's Fireball or whatever, like, is it worth it to me to get dinged for 2 in the face to do this? Yeah, like likely the answer is yes or whatever. But it's still interesting.
It absolutely is. I really like it.
Yeah, I'm here for it. And I don't mind a little more variance in Magic in this way.
Yeah. Ooh. Also, we don't have, you know, we haven't talked about the class enchantments.
Oh, gosh.
Which I just want to touch on briefly because I'm in love.
They're so good.
I love them so much. I think that they're excellent design.
I love them too. Which is your favorite?
Wizard. Wizard class.
I said it, but I already knew the answer.
What's my favorite one?
What's my favorite one? I love them. They give you something to do when you have nothing else to do. They're great bonus at every level. They give you the incidental, whatever their, you know, static ability is. I just... Yeah. I'm here for them.
They're great.
And combining them is fun too, because I just like to imagine like cleric, barbarian or whatever.
Do you know what? Barbarians need clerics too.
Yeah. You know, come on. Why not?
Yeah. I'm a really big fan.
Yeah. I love them. We'll talk about a couple of them coming up for these archetypes, but keep them in mind when you're drafting, because most of the time they're going to be something that you want. There's very few of them that actually don't matter in draft. Yeah. So, yeah.
They're great. All right, Maria, speaking of archetypes.
Let's go. Let's go. Number one we're going to do is your classic blue white Flyers blue white venture.
Yeah, it's the sealed pool that I have. I haven't finished it out yet, but I'm currently 3-1.
Great.
Just because, do you know what? If you slap a bunch of Flyers on the board, it doesn't matter. I've had my opponents, like in the ones that I've won, the one that I lost was the Dungeon of the Mad Mage one that I mentioned.
Yeah.
Their deck was just so sick. Like
Turbo Venture.
Yes, it was Turbo Venture. They played a bunch of really cool cards that worked together great. And I was like, good on you. You did it. I'm very happy for you.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I've had my opponents do like some really cool big stuff, but it's all on the ground. And I'm like, oh, well, here comes my Jin Windseer.
Yeah. Take three.
Take three. Like you're dead next turn. And then they just die. And you're like, got it done.
There it is. Blue white skies.
Okay.
This is the deck to draft. If you don't know what you're doing in draft, it's just like the one, like you sit down, new format. What are you going to do? You haven't read any of the cards. Draft blue white Flyers. Never fails. Hopefully it'll be open.
Exactly. There's plenty of common Flyers. I keep mentioning the Windseer because I think it's just like an excellent one. It's a 4-mana 3/3. It has an enter the battlefield scry effect.
Exactly.
It's like just such a classic, solid, nice Flyer.
Yeah. This was my first draft deck too. And this was the one I got 7 wins with, was blue white. So yeah, I sunk into this. You don't hear people talking about this a lot. But I do think that it's solid. I mean, we have 2 pieces of evidence here and very small evidence pool.
It's just like the most basic. And in the venture realm, there's Displacer Beast.
Yep.
Which I really like. I have multiple times, like, right, if you get up to, because classic core set problem, sometimes you get to 7 or 8 mana and there's not a lot of like busted stuff you can do.
Yeah.
But guess what? Displacer Beast, you're just like, okay, put it back in my hand. Okay, cast it again.
Yeah, this is the one for 4 mana. You can put it back in your hand when it enters the battlefield, you venture 3/2 for three. So like,
great. It's like so easy. You're just like, okay, I have extra mana and nothing really to do. Like, put it in my hand. Play it, let's venture. Put it in my hand. Play it, let's venture.
The gold uncommon here, which is the kind of signpost card for blue-white, is Hamapashar Rune Seeker. That's the 2/3, where room abilities of dungeons you own trigger an additional time, which isn't going to move you to the next room, but you're going to get the same benefit twice, which is pretty cool. I love decks with multiple Hamapashars. I've done it a few times. And it's just like, yes, give me that scry. Give me that life gain. Give me those treasures. Whatever it is, it just makes it really fun. And then paired with a card like Veteran Dungeoneer, which is the 3/4, that when it ETBs, you go into the dungeon, which is like a pretty good stats on that 4-drop. Plus you get the dungeon entering ability, like thumbs up.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier, I don't remember its name, but the 2 and a blue for a 2/2 Flyer.
Oh yeah. I love that
when
card.
When ETBs, you venture into the dungeon. And I think it also has, if you've completed a dungeon at the beginning of combat on your turn, a creature becomes a 1/1 bird.
Yes. And that is an Eccentric Apprentice.
Yes. Yeah. Another great one, right?
Absolutely.
It flies, so it can get in there for damage, and it's going to give you an incidental dungeon bonus.
I love Planar Ally as well, which is a 3/3 for 5 in white.
Yes.
That when it attacks, enter into the dungeon, you have to kill it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just let that thing keep attacking you. Like
Again, Flyer,
yeah.
Like, I know I keep saying it, but Corset, can't say it enough.
Corset, draft Flyers.
Corset.
There's also the torch that helps you venture into the dungeon too.
Yeah.
Which is good, especially like if you're playing the red white equipment deck or something like that, but that'll help you turbo dungeon if you're going all in on venture.
Yeah. Speaking of venture, there's also white black venture.
Yeah, they were like, venture's so nice, we did it twice. It's going to be in the white black too. The golden common for this is Barrowin of Clan Under. Hello, this is our preview card. Little 3/3 for 4. When enters the battlefield, venture into the dungeon. Whenever Barrowin attacks, return up to 1 creature card with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield if you've completed a dungeon.
Sick ability.
Yeah, it's very strong. And this is the deck that's most associated with venture, because I don't know if it technically has more ways to venture or not, but this is just the one that I've seen people who are going on dungeon speed runs. This is what they've been using.
Yeah, it has, like you mentioned, Precipitous Drop.
Yep.
Which Great. Is just a real nice card.
It's so flexible. And like, you're like, oh, I'll put this on here and then I'll just wait. It's on layaway to kill your thing.
Exactly. And in the meantime, their thing is like probably a 1-1 or an 0-1.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's not doing anything anyways.
No, it's just sitting there being just a waste of space, honestly. Thanks, Precipitous Drop. And then you're playing fun cards like Clattering Skellies, which is a 4-3. When it dies, venture into the dungeon. Great. It's going to trade with everything practically. And then you get to get your venture trigger, blah, blah, blah.
It's a great size. 4-3, just nice, right? Either they're going to take 4, which is a big chunk of damage.
Yes.
Especially in this, where I think we, like we already talked about, kind of 2 and 3 are like really usually the allotments of damage that you're giving people.
Yeah.
So if you're getting in for 4, like you're winning the damage race most of the time.
I don't know if you all know this, but your life total magic starts at 20.
If you didn't know that.
You don't know this. I'm going to mention Yuan Ti Fang Blade as well, which is the 2-2 for 3 with Death Touch. When it deals combat damage to a player, venture. Great.
Ooh, great card. Right. You don't want to. You don't want to block it.
No. God.
It have Death Touch.
It have Death Touch. That's like for real. Bad news. All right. We're going to talk about another deck here, which I don't know which one's my favorite, but this one is up there for me.
Yeah. Blue-Black Sneak Attack.
I love this deck so much. This is one that's kind of a little bit more hidden than the other ones. But basically, the goal with this is to attack unblocked and then get some kind of benefit.
Yes. Thieves Tools is a big player here. This is 1 and a black for an equipment. When it ETBs, you make a treasure. Equipped creature can't be blocked as long as its power is 3 or less.
This card's great.
Yeah.
This card's great. Take it, put 2 copies in your blue black deck even. Yeah. I mean, because you're going to want it with cards like Soul Knife Spy, which is your 3-2. Whenever it deals combat damage to a player, draw a card.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
You kidding me? I also put Zombie Ogre on this list, which is a 3-5 for 5 mana. At the beginning of your end step, if a creature died this turn, venture into the dungeon. The reason I want to say this is because it has 3 power, okay? This is a PSA. It can wear Thieves' Tools, and it has 5 toughness. It's never dying. It's very
funny to think of a Zombie Ogre trying to be a thief.
Yeah.
I feel like it would be very obvious.
But, yeah, that's a good, it's a great point.
You know what? Very comical.
I just wanted to say that because I died to zombie ogres wearing thieves' tools the other day. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh yeah, this thing does only have 3 power. Okay, that is what maybe that's a less obvious choice to put into like this sneak attack deck.
Yeah.
And then we have a class card, Megan, here we go. Let's talk about it.
Warlock class. Black, at the beginning of your end step, if a creature died this turn, each opponent loses 1 life.
Great.
1 and a black, when it becomes level 2, look at the top 3 cards of your library, put 1 of them into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. 6 and a black, at the beginning of your end step, each opponent loses life equal to the life they lost this turn.
That level is gonna kill you.
Yeah.
It's gonna kill you. This is maybe my favorite class card because the level 2 is great. They're all kind of doing a little bit different things because level 2 is letting you draw and stuff. Level 1 and 3 are kind of the same, but level 3 is so bad. I mean, look, if you're losing, level 3 is not going to do anything for you. But if you're like anywhere close to like dealing them a couple of damage every turn, it becomes a clock so fast that it cannot be stopped.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal.
Yeah, and I just love the purple art on this card coming out of this, whatever this is. I don't know. It's really badass. I just like Warlock class, especially in this sneaky deck, because you're sneaking in, they can't be blocked, so you're just gonna six them.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sick.
With Soul Knife Spy.
Yeah. Next up is Green White Life Gain. I had someone play this against me the other day and it was very good.
Yeah, it's super cool deck.
It was very, very cool. So the uncommon here is Trelisara Moon Dancer, green and a white. Whenever you gain life, put a +1/+1 counter on Trelisara Moon Dancer and scry 1.
Great. A+. Yeah. I mean, because that's, you know, getting the reward for doing the thing your colors want you to do. And in green, white, it's just chock full of ways to just gain life on top of creatures that are already good. A Lurking Roper is the standout for me, which is the 4-5 for 3 mana. 3 mana. Doesn't untap during your untap step, but whenever you gain life, it untaps. Who cares? You're gaining life almost every single turn in this deck. So Lurking Roper is just like, oh yeah, you want a 4-5 for 3? Here you go.
Yep. Yep.
Boom.
giant.
Megan, have you played with Priest of Ancient Lore yet?
Yes, I love it. I love it. What's not to love about it? It says draw a card.
Gain a life, draw a card, 2/1 trades with a red aggressive deck. Yep.
I love this card. Yep. It is. But there's nothing I can say about it.
That's it. That's it's
the, because I like it so much.
It's the greatest.
What else am I going to say?
I saw somebody playing 4 copies of this the other day, and the jealousy I felt.
Yeah.
Was
good on them.
Intense.
Yes.
Intense. What a great card.
And then we also have Dawnbringer Cleric, which I just like because it's so flexible.
Yeah, agree.
It's great. 1 and a white. When it ETBs, you can gain 2 life, destroy an enchantment, or exile a card from a graveyard.
Yeah.
Like, destroying an enchantment is a big deal in this because we've talked about how great those class cards are.
Oh, yeah.
They're so good.
This card it slices and dices, whatever you want. Dawnbringer Cleric might not look impressive, but you want it in your deck.
Yep. So solid. Very into it.
Red White Equipment is a very popular deck right now. Headlined by Brunner Battlehammer, 2 red-white for a 5/3. Each creature you control gets +2/+0 for each equipment attached to it. You may pay 0 rather than pay the equip cost of the first equip ability you activate each turn. It's dumb.
Great. Great stuff.
Card's great.
I've played with Plate Armor for the first time. 2 and a white. For an artifact equipment, equipped creature gets +3/+3 and has ward 1.
That's huge.
+3/+3.
Yep. I mean, no, you think this card gives +1/+2 or something? No.
+3/+3.
And ward.
I keep saying it, but it's just so much.
And it costs 1 less to equip. Its equip cost is 3 for each other equipment you control, which if you're playing this deck, you have more equipment anyway.
Yeah, it's a good card. Equipments are usually real touch and go.
Yep.
They can be fine to bad most of the time.
Yeah, agree.
This is not one of those. It is very solid.
Super solid. The ward 1 helps protect itself, which is another reason why it's so great, because you're going to force your opponents to wait an extra turn to use their removal on it or whatever.
I had someone not realize that this thing gave ward 1.
No!
And they tried to, like, whatever, the 1 and a blue tap, like, enchantment that keeps it tapped. They, like,
Ray of Frost or whatever?
Yes. Yeah. They tried to cast it on my end step. I mean, they did cast it on my end step. On my 4/5 flyer.
Didn't do what they wanted it to do.
No. No, it was a 5/6 flyer. Sick. Because of this. And it was very sad for them.
Oh, sad news. The other card I listed here was Armory Veteran, just because it's a classic example of a card that belongs in this deck. It's a 2/2 for 2. As long as Armory Veteran is equipped, it has menace. Boom. There you go.
And there's like the 3/1 for 1 and a white that if it's equipped, it gets +0/+2.
Yep, exactly.
Great stuff.
Yeah, just excellent cards. You can't have too many 2-drops in this deck. Just load them up, keep your curve low to the ground, and smash them till they're dead.
Yep, gets the job done.
Very strong. Here we go, Megan's favorite deck, Blue-Red Dice. You mentioned Faraday. Here she is.
So good. So good.
Whenever you roll 1 or more dice, she's the 3/3, she gains flying and menace until end of turn. If any of those results was 10 or higher, draw a card.
Great. It's so good.
I've picked this card in draft so many times, being like, all right, here we go. We're going to do it this time. No, it never happens, as you know.
Just as good, maybe better.
Yeah.
Feywild Trickster.
Probably better.
2 and a blue for a 2/2. Whenever you roll 1 or more dice, create a 1/1 blue fairy dragon creature token with flying.
Excellent.
They either get in for damage or they just chump block for forever.
Yeah, it's such like incidental bonus on this card because you're going to be rolling dice anyway. You're just going to get this swarm of 1/1s. It's great.
I love it so much. Pixie Guide, which I mixed up the names of these two earlier, but 1 and a blue for a 1/3. Also just a great size.
Yeah.
Flying. If you would roll 1 or more dice, instead roll that many dice +1 and ignore the lowest roll.
Yeah, I love it. Gives you advantage.
Yeah.
A+.
Yes. There's also Brazen Dwarf, which is the 1/3 for 1 and a red. When you roll a die, it pings your opponent.
Great.
I had someone just kill me with a pair of those. They rolled it like, right, you play 2 of them and you roll a die every turn.
Yeah.
That's a quick clock.
That's a real deal.
You can't just have blockers for that.
No, that doesn't exist. The blocker is your face.
Does not matter. Yes, exactly. Like, there's nothing to get between you and that brazen dwarf.
I block with my face. Take two.
Yeah. Hold on. I want to see if I can pull up my deck real quick.
Yeah. Because I want to
try and remember anything else. I'll send you a screenshot so we can see it up here.
Yeah. I'll, you know, maybe one day this deck will come into my greedy little hands. But everybody else is like, they know that it's great.
Everybody want it. Everybody want it bad.
Makes sense. It's really good.
I love this, right? Like, I loved Arcane Investigator, which is a nice, again, like, repeatable late game effect. It's the one that for 5 and a blue, and you can tap it and you roll a die to draw some cards.
100%.
Just nice stuff. I know I keep talking about it, but Jeannie Windseer, like, I had 3 copies of this.
Ooh, you had a Mind Flayer in here, too? Steal your creature, get a 3-3. Wow.
So good. Great.
2 magic like missiles, said, meteor swarm.
This deck was hot.
This is a hot deck.
It was very, very good.
Wow.
yeah. Like I said, treasure chest. Like, when you're able to roll 2 dice.
Yeah, that's
treasure
true.
Chest is
gets a lot better.
An A+ card. It was so good. It was so good.
Awesome. Now that makes you want to put like treasure chest and then force this deck because that seems so sweet.
Yeah, but you need to roll 2 dice.
But yes, you do. Want otherwise, to
draw
it's
for that hard. Much mana, you better be drawing 3 cards. Yeah. Bottom side.
Blue green is a ramp deck, classic blue green. It's been the terror of our lives for the past Eldraine years. Gretchen Titchwillow is the gold uncommon here, blue and a green for an 0/4. So it's just a little blocker, but you can pay 4 to draw a card and put a land from your hand onto the battlefield.
River Hoopoo.
She's a River Hoopoo. You're
She's
right.
She's a little River Hoopoo.
Except she doesn't fly.
She doesn't fly.
And deal
she doesn't
damage.
Fly. And she doesn't gain you life. But you do get to draw a card.
What was Hoopoo's power? Was it 2?
Was it a 1/3?
Or was it a 1/3? Yeah, okay.
I think it was a 1/3.
Yeah, River Hoopoo, Ground Hoopoo.
Gretchen Titchwillow, Ground Hoopoo.
I like her. I played her in a deck. She's just fun because who doesn't love just paying to draw some cards and like ramp yourself for like no good reason. Sometimes I would just keep going off with Gretchen Titchwillow like multiple times a turn. It was very fun.
I mean, you draw a card.
Yeah, you draw a card. Nice. It's great.
Yeah.
And then you can play your owlbears early.
Ooh, 3 green trample. When it ETBs, draw a card. It's a 4/4.
Yes.
Just solid.
Yes. And this guy is really cute.
Yeah, very cute. Very, very
just
cute.
A fat little mad owl, which honestly, owls always seem mad, which is part of why they're so cute, because they always look so upset. They're just like,
yeah,
so you're angry like, you woke them up.
Owl, why are you so mad?
Owl, you're so cute. You can't be mad. You can turn your head all the way around. That's pretty cool. Why would you be mad? And the owl's just like, if you look at me for 5 more seconds, I will cut your head off with my mouth.
And they could.
And they could.
They seem like they could.
And they could.
Just like how a swan can break an arm with its beak.
Like by pecking it?
Yeah.
Jeez.
It can just like.
Wow. I didn't know swan could do that.
One of the big payoffs in this color combo is blue dragon. 5 blue for a 5/5.
Yeah.
Flying. When it ETBs. Target creature and opponent gets controls get -3/-0. Another one gets -2/-0. And another one gets -1/-0 until your next turn. It's just great ability.
Great ability. It's the most expensive dragon. That's what you're ramping to, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Then we have black, red, treasure, and sacrifice.
Yes.
I also drafted this. I went 5/3 with it. It was super fun.
This deck is, I think, the number one favorite right now of people, and for good reason.
It was like the one that I made was, I think, just like a little too finicky, but I had a lot of like the steel effect, and then I just had a lot of ways to sacrifice their stuff.
Great. Let's go.
Every time it happened, it was so great.
Yeah. If you have Price of Loyalty plus a card like Sepulchre Ghoul, which gets +2/+2 when you sacrifice another creature, like that happened to me earlier today. And I was like, oh, that's a sweet deck.
Yep. I had like Tiger Tribe Hunter and then the one in a black where you sat like it
deadly
also
dispute or whatever.
Yes, great.
So good.
Yeah, but the uncommon here is Kalain, reclusive painter, great card, black and a red. When it ETBs, create a treasure token. Other creatures you control enter the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on them for each mana from a treasure spent to cast them.
It's so cool to use treasures this way.
Yeah, I really like it.
We've also got sweet cards like Skullport Merchant, which is a 1/4 for 2 and a black. When it enters the battlefield, make a treasure. 1 and a black, sack another creature or a treasure, draw a card.
Lots of abilities like this where you can sacrifice an artifact or a creature or like a treasure or a creature. And like if you're just incidentally making a bunch of treasures, so nice.
Yeah, so nice. Only 2 to draw a card. That's a cost we don't generally see. I wanted to mention a Horde Robber here for 1 and a black. It's a 1/3. Whenever it deals combat damage to a player, make a treasure. This card is better than it looks. It's similar fashion to the 1/3 cleric in white, where like you don't want to get hit with this.
Yeah, it's really, it's just so annoying. On the other like hand of that, it's like, it's pretty easy to block because there are lots of 1/3s in the format, but like you want to get one down because like you said, yeah, you don't want to get hit by this.
You don't want to get hit. You'll get the treasure. You'll be able to cast stuff on your splash or do all these treasure shenanigans with Skullport Merchant or, you know, the Reclusive Painter, etc.
It's so annoying.
Or play a Hired Hexblade, which is the 2/2. If you paid a treasure to cast it, you draw a card, lose a life. Yeah, stuff like that.
Or there's like the ogre that when you attack, you roll a die and you make treasures.
Oh, it's so good.
Hoarding ogre, I had someone really go off with this deck against me. And it was with like the treasure aspect of it and Kalain. And it was super cool.
Yeah. And this is what we're talking about when we're like, oh, you can do cool stuff even within this core set. I think this is like number one example. Sure. Red-green is exactly what you would think it is.
big smashies.
Big smasheroonies.
There's Targ-Nar, Demon Fang Gnoll, red and a green for a 2/2. Whenever it attacks, if you attacked with creatures with total power 6 or greater this combat, attacking creatures get +1/+0 until end of turn.
Nice.
Two red, green, double its power and toughness until end of turn.
I just love when you said Targ-Nar because I thought like you messed up when you said it because it sounds like somebody just had, something was in the back of my throat.
Targ-Nar.
Targ-Nar. But no, that's its name. Mm-hmm. And this is the Pack Tactics deck. I've never played against anybody playing red, green, which is kind of weird now that I think about it, but cards that want to be here are cards like Hobgoblin Captain, which is a 3/1 with Pack Tactics tacked onto it. It gets first strike until end of turn. That thing's impossible to block. I think just because the red cards are being split into red, white, and red, blacks and red, blue so much more frequently that red, green just never happens.
It's just hard because red is so popular.
Yeah. So I don't know. I've personally never seen this deck. Maybe red just has better places to be, but it exists.
I'm so sorry. I have another meeting that I have to be in.
I'm sorry. I have to wash my hair. And finally, green black stuff die.
Stuff die.
Stuff die.
Like we have Skeletal Swarming. 3 black green for an enchantment. Each skeleton you control has trample, attacks each combat table, and gets +X/+0, where X is the number of other skeletons you control.
Love it.
At the beginning of your end step, create a tapped 1/1 black skeleton creature token. If a creature died this turn, create 2 of those tokens instead.
I love this card. I drafted it the other day. I splashed it, in fact, off treasures. Thanks, treasures. This card's insane, obviously, but the funniest part was my opponent had to kill it because I kept making so many skellies every turn. But by killing it, it meant my skellies didn't have to attack, so they could just stop and block now if they wanted to. Which is a hidden bonus.
So many skellies. So many skellies.
I love skellies. Another creature in this deck is just a solid green creature, Boulette, which is a 3/3 for 4. At the end, beginning of your end step, if a creature died this turn, put a +1/+1 counter on Boulette. And you're going to be killing everything. So go right ahead. Put those counters on Boulette. Yep. It's going to get huge.
We also have Grim Wanderer, 1 and a black for a 5/3 flash. Cast it only if a creature died this turn.
Yeah, I've gotten flash in and profitably blocked by Grim Wanderer for sure.
Woof.
And I love the flavor text. What is this called? Reminder... Keyword text. I forget what they're called. Tragic backstory.
Yeah, great.
I love it. I want to know what the backstory is. And Sepulchre Ghoul that we mentioned goes right into this deck. which makes it very hard to block. Sepulchre, right?
I thought it was sepulchre, but I don't know how to pronounce. I don't know how to pronounce anything. So.
Well, there you go, sepulchre. We all learned something this episode.
Sepulchre.
Let's look up the meaning of sepulchre. Sepulchre.
It's a place. It's like a monument. Like a tomb.
A small room or monument cut in rock or built of stone in which a dead person is laid or buried. Thank you, dictionary.com, for specifying that the person must be dead. Before they are buried.
Otherwise, it's just a fancy bedroom, Maria.
Well, there's a look at all the archetypes from Adventures in the Forgotten Realms draft. Some really sweet stuff going on.
Yeah, that was a bunch of them.
You know what? We're getting more than our normal bang for a buck here with this core set. So go out and play it. I think it's really fun. It is still a core set, so it's very straightforward generally, but it has enough added complexity that I think it just raises it above every other core set that I've personally played, and I've been having such a fun time.
Yeah, it's been a blast, for sure.
Let's talk about Ultra Pro, everybody.
That's right. Another amazing sponsor of this show and the place to go for all of your card sleeves, decks, boxes.
That's what that's the plural.
Yes, it's Dex Box. Playmats, dice, everything that you need.
Yeah, I was just looking through their Twitter account, where you should follow them, by the way, at let's see, how do you say this? Ultra Pro INTL, so international, because they post lots of cool pictures of all their stuff that they have. And they've got playmats for those new signets from that secret lair drop, which are the cool old classic art by Dan Frazier. And they are so, so neat. So if you're into those signets and you're like, I don't want to buy the secret lair set for whatever reason, but you want the playmats, these are sick. So I think the Orzhov one just looks so cool. But they've got them on playmats, of course, because Ultra Pro loves to celebrate the art of the game. One of the reasons we love them so much. So go check them out. They've got everything that you could possibly want with art from the new set, including the secret lairs, which nobody else has got. So thanks, Ultra Pro, for being our sponsor and for continually making good stuff.
Continuing to make Dex Box.
Uh-oh, we must be coming to the end of the episode. Well, everybody, that's this episode of Good Luck High Five. Thank you so much for listening, putting us in your ear holes again.
Yeah, I'm about to head back up the mountain.
The 14er?
No, not that one. Just the one where I have no internet. So I'll see y'all next week.
All right, Megan's going back up the mountain.
After I've showered again.
Okay, she'll shower again. Maybe, you never know.
Oh, I definitely will.
I might not. So next episode.
Fair enough.
There might be at least one of us who isn't showered. We'll find out. But yeah, thank you so much, everybody, for being a supporter over on patreon.com/glhfmagic. Reminder, if your name's Scott or Oren, special challenge to you to become a patron before next episode. Thank you to Card Kingdom. Thank you to Ultra Pro for being our awesome sponsors. And thank you to all the cats and dogs and birds who do a great job broadcasting our show every week.
Let us know what have you been having a lot of success drafting?
Yes.
We want to hear about it.
We would love to know. Down in the comments. Please
tell us.
Please reply in the comments and let us know. You can also tweet at us at GLHFMagic with your sweet deck picks. We love to see it.
Yep.
You can also chat in our Discord if you're a patron and post pictures of your winning deck lists or cool decks that you're building, maybe in Standard 2022, because nobody's playing current Standard anymore. But Standard 22 is like actually really sweet.
Sick. So, I'm very excited.
Yeah, we should talk about that on an upcoming episode because there's a ton of cool new decks. Lots of exciting stuff happening in Magic right now, and we're so happy that you're all here with us every single week to just, hang out, chill, and have a good time talking about it.
Yeah. All right. Till next time.